Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure, where we have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that we can say our names in more or less harmonious fashions. Fashion.
More or less than
fashion.
More.
Singular, yes.
I should say more or less than more, which
more
only
less
makes
than
sense
more
in that context.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well, first off, we need to take our clothes off. I mean, disclose that the Personal Wealth Coach is not merely a radio program broadcast on KTEM, News Radio 14. Actually, News Radio 14, KTEM is what I'm supposed to say there.
I think, yeah.
To get it correct. It is also an investment advisory firm, a wealth management firm, something of that ilk, registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission as our primary regulator, and with a domicile which has nothing to do with camels in Salado, Texas. And the two guys who are in here, Jeff and
Jake,
are both principals and advising members of the Wealth Coach LLC. And you're going to be, you'll be able to tell us apart very easily today.
Yes.
Jake, because Jake is wearing plaid.
I'm wearing my plaid. And
yes, he's wearing tiny plaid.
And Jeff is wearing plain.
I'm wearing plain. I'm playing my khakis.
His beard is white and mine is less white.
It's
mostly not white.
Mostly dark brown and black and stuff like
yeah.
that. And I'm wearing cool clothes and he's not.
Or I would say I'm wearing cool clothes and he's not.
No. KUHL is the brand of both the shirt and the pants that I'm wearing.
You're doing an endorsement of clothing. Now I see you are.
I'm signing on, not off. And if you would like to contact us, presuming that today is Saturday, July 25th, where you are, unless of course you're across the international date line, and it is the 25th or 26th?
26th.
It's the 26th on the other side of the Pacific, which you could be listening via myktem.com.
Marshall Islands. I mean, Marshall Islanders may be listening
yes,
to
yes.
our program
well, the Japanese,
tomorrow.
The Japanese might be listening to us tomorrow. It's just a really, really, really bad time lag between here and there. Talking about latency.
Yeah, so the reality is that we are live today and tomorrow, depending on where you are.
Which is a good sign, because that means I am already alive tomorrow.
Yes.
Which is good. So, anyway, the telephone numbers locally here in Central Texas, actually in East Bell County, which is a little smaller than all of Central Texas, there would be 773-1400 otherwise.
1-866-597-1400. Most other places in the sound of our voices. If you're in the Marshall Islands, that may not work.
Yeah, you could dial from the Marshall Islands, you could dial 1-254-773-1400 and actually get here.
Hopefully.
Maybe it's 01. I think it's 01.
It could be.
Something like that. Anyway, we're here, you're there, and we love it.
We hope you're there anyway.
Yeah, actually, where you are to you is here, and we are there. But that's all beside the point. If you would like to give us a call, again, 773-1400 in East Bell County, otherwise.
1-866-597-1400.
And did anything happen interesting this week?
Yes, I'm going to give some very conflicting news just for the fun of it because it's economics.
Okay.
Existing home sales increased 3.2% in June. New single family home sales declined 6.8% in June.
But this is the interesting part. Actually, more homes were sold because 3% of existing homes is a heck of a lot better, is a much, much, much larger
right.
figure than 6% of new homes.
Right. And existing homes, the new home sales are up 18% over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where when people talk, well, existing home sales are down 6.8%.
Yeah, that's the headline.
Let me say here, and that is the headline, and it's a headline in publications that most people don't get, so they're like, that's not any headline I looked at.
Well, it's more of a hindline then.
Yeah, so for us, it's a headline, and we think it's really important, but one of those things we watch regularly is new home sales. And we talked about this last week, that most of the new home sales are multifamily homes. They're duplexes mm-hmm. or apartment complexes.
Right.
And that the single-family home sales, new ones, mm-hmm. are still way up over a year ago, but they're down a little bit.
If they were to truly track single-family home sales, it'd be different.
Well, let me add this one piece here real quick.
Go ahead.
The other factor here is that it's for the month of June.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at June throughout history...
Going back to the Romans,
well, at least going back to the public school system.
I had to throw that
right,
in. Right. During the Holy Roman Empire.
Right. Not quite that. I did say throughout history.
Yes,
you should
be
through in history.
Okay. You just threw that in.
I did. So if you go back to since the founding of the public school system, the summer months tend to be when a lot of the sales are finalized. But they generally start taking place in May. They drop in June, mm-hmm. and then hit really high in July and August. And that's because people tend to put their houses on the market in June. When we look at this inventory rose, that was part of the reason why it slowed down. Because people are putting their homes on the market because they want to move to another place for a job or whatever. And they want to do it in the summer when their kids are not in school.
Ooh. It's very complicated. Which means that the socialist... education system, because it's very definitely a socialist system.
Right, it's altered the capitalist system of buying and selling real estate.
It's distorted the capitalist real estate market.
This is also why, when we talk about unemployment figures, that's why they're seasonally adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
Home sales are not seasonally adjusted.
And they should be.
There's a lot of things, or they shouldn't be, and we should just only report them if we're going to say this is June. Of course, they're down.
Yeah, but
this is when everybody puts their house on the market.
Really neat headlines to say they're down 6.something%.
But there is after all of that dry and esoteric talk, this is the tidbit that you can take out of that.
Okay, is that like a tidbit?
No, TED Talks are, when they give those bits, it's a different thing.
Tidbit.
One good piece of information that you can take from this is if you're expecting to need to buy a house, you should probably look around June. When everybody puts their house on the market and housing sales slow down. You can look in May as well, but there'll be less houses on the market. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah,
June, everybody goes, we're going to put our house on the market. And if you wait till the end of June, they've had the house on the market for 20 or 30 days, and they're looking around going, we need to move, and no one is looking.
Well, in many cases, they do move and they leave it empty, in which case you could say, I'm going to give you a low bid.
Right. So
but it all depends on what other people are doing.
So if you know why the trend exists, then you can take advantage of it. If you just know that a trend exists, it's very, very dangerous. So
mm-hmm.
know why it exists, and that's for any economic trend. So there was my tidbit at the end of economics news.
I wonder where the term tidbit came from. That's interesting. Well, we had something else happen this week. The market dropped meaning the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Why do you always do your radio voice for this part?
Well, because, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is a fictitious thing.
It's only fictitious if you don't think that thoughts are real.
Well,
we all agree that it exists, so it's as real as money.
We all agree that novels exist, too, and a lot of people think... that Cookie Monster is a real person, but that's all right.
He's not a real person. Wait a minute.
and Big Bird, who, by the way, isn't Big Bird in Mexico. I forgot what he was, but it's an astonishing name.
Yeah, he doesn't look the same anyway. So
this is during the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 2.86%. The S&P 500 dropped 2.21%. The NASDAQ was down 2.33%. Yeah, that was kind of interesting. And like houses, there's a very, very good... Now, there's lots of reasons listed for the decline. Among other things, the fact that Amazon turned a profit in the last quarter.
Yeah, well, it's not...
$92 million profit.
That's not a normal thing for Amazon, though.
$92 billion profit or something. I don't know. A whole bunch.
It's a lot. Amazon isn't normally one that likes to turn profits.
No, they like to unturn profits.
What they do is they take any profits they might have and they reinvest it immediately. And people have said that's a horrible practice, except that it seems to be working really, really well for them.
And as a result of Amazon's actually being profitable for one quarter, its stocks jumped 10% to a market value of $22 billion. It was $92 million in net income. the general consensus prior to its reporting was that it was going to lose $60 million. So that's and they didn't promise it was going to keep on going. Somebody commented that Amazon chief Jeff Bezos probably has $92 million in his desk drawer that he can whip out every now and then.
Yeah, the rise in the value of Amazon, I think, added $7 billion to his net worth.
Yeah.
He might have some extra pocket change hanging around.
So it went from having actually last quarter, the price earnings ratio of Amazon was 373. In other words, it's unadjusted price earnings ratio. The price of Amazon stock last quarter, and before this reported earnings, was 373 times reported earnings, annual earnings. Now it's down to only 76 times. So, you know, but in, by the way, it jumped up and passed Walmart when it jumped 10%. So now, Amazon is actually at, or the size, or pretty close to at least the size of Walmart as far as market capitalization, which is sort of an interesting thing. Despite that, the market declined. Now that to me is sort of fascinating.
Google came out with some really big news and launched themselves into the stratosphere for their, by the way, when we mention these stocks, when we mention these companies, we are certainly not recommending
them.
No, we are not.
Okay. We just wanted to validate. We're not recommending any stock.
We don't recommend stocks.
We recommend them collectively, but not individually.
Correct.
Yes. Because any individual can any individual stock can do anything. For instance, IBM, Caterpillar, 3M, American Express, Microsoft, all went down.
And let me say, what you just said is that we recommend them collectively, but only to specific types of people. There are people that should not be in the stock market, and that should be very clear.
Well, they should stay out of New York altogether.
Yes, go away from New York.
And China fell to a 15-month low. Very significantly this week, gold fell to a 5-year low of just over $1,000. Actually, when we say $1,000, $1,098 was what the listing was, but you can't actually buy gold for $1,098. That's a futures contract in which there is no gold involved.
If you adjust for inflation, we're back down to where we were in 1984.
Good. Good. Yeah,
so
if you bought gold in 1984, you could sell it today and at break-even, except for one small problem.
If you had bought, except for all of the...
You would have paid a lot of storage fees along the way, and there's this little problem that...
There's a commission on the sale of that gold.
Well, there's also, in addition to the commission, if you could somehow dodge the commission...
That's another fictitious thing. You can't dodge the commission.
There is another small element in there, and that is that despite the fact that the gold really isn't worth anything more today than it was in 1984, you'd have to pay a really, really, really big income tax bill for having sold your gold today.
Correct, because all that inflation is considered taxable.
Yeah.
When people were talking about the record price of gold, we got up to about $1,900 an ounce.
Right. Back in 2011.
Yes. In August of 2011, we were up to $1,921. It was all-time record for gold. But if you adjust for inflation and you go back to, let's see here, January of 1980, it was $2,079 an ounce.
So you've only lost 50%.
Right. If you in 1979...
So in 35 years, you lost 50% of your value.
Yeah.
Hey, that's...
If you bought at the top and you sold now.
Right. That is a long-term trend.
Yes, that is. Now, it was down in inflation-adjusted terms in July of 2001. It was down to $359 an ounce. So if you'd bought then... You would be looking around saying, "Why? How could you lose money in gold?" And people say, "You're so down on gold."
We are.
I know people that have made lots of money. Yes, people have made lots of money in gold. Don't get us wrong there. But they made money in gold out of pure luck because it's a commodity. It's based on supply and demand. It's not based on the magic of gold.
It's not even based on anything economic. Copper, for example, has an economic basis, and we can, and there's a fairly simple process of determining the appropriate price of copper in the market based on industrial demand. And that's what drives the price of copper. What drives the price of gold? I read a very good article today that suggested the price of gold is driven by the price of oil. That as oil prices go up, gold prices go up, and as oil prices go down, gold prices go down. They just magnify the move. In other words, there's a factor of about five that occurs with gold and oil. So if you could predict the price of oil, you could theoretically predict the price of gold, except for the people who buy and sell oil don't generally do it in with gold. And that sounds really weird.
You don't buy oil with gold?
No.
I thought it was the black gold and Texas tea.
But you can't convert gold into black gold very easily. It's really nearly impossible because of the markups and markdowns and the markovers and the fact that the oil being spilled on the gold is really messy. Anyway, one of the issues, this is, to me, an interesting issue at least, is apparently on an international basis, one of the reasons that gold has declined to the degree that it has is because nation states are selling gold and buying dollars. And that is fairly significant. And when there's some query as to why are you selling gold and buying dollars, they conclude that dollars are more stable than gold, which makes actually a great deal of sense from about 12 or 14 different directions.
There's a wonderful website.
Really?
Yes. And the website's called macrotrends.net.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, it's kind of open source. What they've done is they've taken all of the pricing data for oil and for gas and for gold and the dollar and so on, inflation and stocks and debt and employment, and they've made graphs out of it, and you can actually download the data. So if you want to look at the dollar versus gold chart, it's on here. And what it shows is that they even have a dollar, gold, and oil historical chart.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find is that people have this myth that gold is a protection from inflation. It's not.
No, well, yeah,
they
absolutely
have a myth that it's somehow a better monetary unit than the dollar. And if you just look at the dollar index, and this is adjusted for inflation for gold, oil, and the dollar, because then people say, well, how can you adjust for inflation? Well, it's pretty simple. You say, how much can it buy? And
mm-hmm.
the same is true for how much can it buy, and then you apply that number to the dollar amount it would take to buy gold, and you see that gold goes way up and then way down and then way up and then way down. In fact, it is far more volatile than most other commodities, and people buy it for its stability, which is a problem. It's a real problem in that if you buy something that is the least stable item in a group for its stability, you may actually need to have something examined. I'm not sure what examine.
Interestingly enough, The Economist on January 20th had a very good article where they were explaining why the price of gold has been falling. It says it serves two purposes. It's a commodity used in electronics, jewelry, and dentistry.
Uh-huh.
And it's a store of value.
Uh-huh.
The problem with it as a store of value is it brings no income.
Right.
It costs money to store it. And it is subject to manipulation by other people.
Very much so.
Now, but there's a bigger problem. The bigger problem is that if the price of gold goes up, the miners crank up their operations and have historically added about 1% per year to the total quantity of gold in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Gold, this is the big problem with gold. It is not consumed.
No.
And since it is not consumed, and generally people guard it very, very, very carefully so that they don't lose it, it doesn't disappear, it doesn't evaporate, it doesn't go away, And that's one of its great advantages, by the way. It's non-volatile. It doesn't oxidize. It's mostly kept in vaults where they charge money to keep it. This is the point. If you have a certain amount of something and people think it is worth a certain amount of money, and you continue over the years to add 1% to that volume, by definition, over time, the value of that particular item, presuming above and beyond whatever use it's put to in electronics and jewelry and dentistry, which is a very tiny percentage, the price will gradually fall over time. And for about the last 650 years, that's what it's been doing.
There was an asteroid that passed this week.
Oh.
And it sounds like I've just changed the subject drastically.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to put an asteroid on that statement.
Yes. An asteroid passed this week. It did. It was called 2011 UW158.
Is that similar to a kidney stone passing?
It may be.
Okay.
It may be. It was watched by a lot of people
in the
astronomer community because it was made mostly...
I know
mostly,
some people who watched it.
It was made mostly of platinum. And at today's prices, that platinum in that asteroid would be worth roughly $5.4 trillion with a T, not a B, not an M, trillion.
Well, that's unless you tried to sell it all at once, in which case the price of platinum would plummet to
zero. It would be worth $3. Right. So, and why am I bringing this up? Because it passed within 5 lengths of the orbit of the moon to the Earth.
Yes.
And it didn't pass going that fast.
Mm.
And basically it's scheduled to pass again in a couple of decades, but there are a lot of asteroids out there that are made of precious metals. And if you think that Elon Musk's only goal is to set up a city on Mars, then you got another think coming.
You think about that, a few trillion dollars worth of...
That might support some technological spending on how to get to Mars.
It might increase his net worth.
Right. And if all we do is what the European Space Agency did, is send a little probe up there to sit down on the asteroid and start gathering... And we have 3D printers that... are beginning to be able to print parts and create little robots that put those parts together and create another spacecraft on the asteroid to take back the proceeds. It would be an asteroid made of platinum that could make the robot out of platinum. And the robot would come back and would be the payload. Yes. It would come back and land and say, all right, now just melt me down, please.
When you consider that it is now not only possible, but fairly routine for a private company to put an object, to do what
heavy,
only governments
very,
could
very
do,
heavy objects into space.
Resupply the space station and do things like that.
And almost land back on boats in the ocean,
yeah,
which the governments have not been able to do. They're getting really close, and they are able to retrieve the equipment.
Mm-hmm. It's only a matter of time, and I don't know how long the time is.
It's not going to be very long.
Till private spacefaring companies...
Mining companies.
...can go out and capture asteroids made out of platinum and recover the platinum to Earth. And that may have an, but this is...
There's some dangers involved there.
Well, there is, but let me draw a parallel here that's very obvious to me. And I think about it and even talk about it a lot, but I don't think I've said anything about it on the radio. The price of gold, indeed, at one time, was a stable value in the face of shifting economies. The problem was that was prior to the Spanish Empire extending itself into the New World. In other words, Columbus really screwed this up. So during the late Roman Empire and moving on during the Middle Ages particularly, the price of gold was a very, very, very steady, reliable item.
There was another time between about 1920 and 1969
time frame.
Right,
but that was because it was dictated by governments.
Right.
Exactly. By law.
It was very, very stable.
And by the way, you as a American citizen could not own a bar of gold during that period of time legally. So we can just leave that out.
It was at $35 an ounce.
Yes.
It stayed there, $35.31 for a very long time.
Right.
But only because the government said that's the price of gold.
The United States government said that's the price of gold. The Bretton Woods Agreement agreed to that, and that 35 and 1 ounce of silver was $1, and 35 ounces of gold was $35 bought an ounce of gold. So it was a 35-to-1 ratio. Very artificial.
Yeah.
Very unsustainable. And it wouldn't work today because
there's too much gold.
Right. Well, not just there's too much gold. It's a matter of even if the price was set, everybody wouldn't work with it. Just like OPEC trying to set the price of oil.
Right.
Well, we had the majority of the gold reserves in the world that remained, and so we could dictate the price of gold. Well, we can't do that anymore.
And what I mean about having too much gold is too many people own the gold.
Right.
And if it's concentrated in one spot and people aren't allowed to own it outside of that, then it's really easy to set the price.
But what I want to go back to after we get past this rabbit trail, the reason the price of gold was stable and the reason we still believe in the price of gold dates back to the Middle Ages with, like, a lot of our cultural beliefs. During that time period, it was extremely expensive to get out of Europe, to go anywhere else, like nearly impossible. And the gold mines in Europe had pretty much been exhausted. So with the technology they had, with the gold that was available in the ground, they had pretty much run out of new gold. And so there was a fixed quantity of gold in Europe, and that was that. When the Spanish discovered that there were a bunch of people running around in Central and South America that had a lot of gold, and they began to import it back into Spain, the price of gold ultimately wound up dropping, and this is a long and complicated story, and I'm oversimplifying it here, but excuse me. The price of gold ultimately dropped about 80%, and then it dropped to 90% and pretty much stayed there for quite a while. And this is the problem. When a new source of availability for what was a commodity that was considered stable and precious because it was rare, when that new source is discovered, the rare commodity becomes a common item. The British are famous for having lost control of the wool market at one point after the Dutch lost control of the wool market, and the price of wool fell. And this type of thing goes on over time where people think that there is some commodity, there is something that if they get that, then their money, their value is safe. And the fact is that the commodity, it's once something is considered to be safe and inappropriately priced, which gold is both considered, somebody is going to find a way to blow that up. And in this particular case, crossing the Atlantic Ocean and harvesting gold from the New World was a much, much, much bigger technological challenge in the 1600s than sending a rocket ship out in a couple of years when that platinum or gold asteroid passes by again, and capturing said asteroid, putting it in orbit around Earth, and beginning to mine it.
Yeah.
That is...
We can figure out how to do that now. We generally don't even have to put people at risk to do it. We just send robots up to do it.
And it's just, we're getting there, and we're getting there fairly quickly. And the end result is that I think we're going to have the ability to blow commodity markets out of the water.
Right. It's the same thing
Near future.
We've known about these precious metal asteroids out there for a very long time. Since we've been able to scatter light off of things and figure out by the way the light is scattering what the elements are, and when we can use spectrometry, my tang is tangled. Spectrometers to figure out what an item is made of, we've looked up there and said, wow, there's a lot of gold up there. There's a lot of silver up there. There's a lot of iron and platinum and a lot of other things. And there may be stuff up there that we've never seen before.
There's a very, very important factor since we're dwelling at length on gold here, and we need to do some commercials, but I want to get this last item in. There was a serious belief among people who thought gold might become more valuable in the future that caused them to buy a lot of gold.
Right.
which ran the price up to the nearly $2,000 level. And it had nothing to do with governments collapsing or recessions. This is one of the things that surprised me. Because during the Great Recession, the price of gold dropped substantially.
Yeah.
Dropped down to, I think, $700.
It was about $1,000, and it dropped down to somewhere right around $700. So,
okay,
it dropped
30%. Yeah. It dropped 30% in a financial crisis.
And then it jumped back up.
And why did it jump back up? Well, and I just discovered this, by the way, in the Economist article. China
wants
to bring the yuan, which, by the way, is equivalent of saying dollar in China. I found out what they were saying, the yuan and the renminbi.
Renminbi
means people's currency. Yuan means it is just the actual currency. Anyway, whatever that thing is, we'll call it a yuan for a moment. They want to use that as a reserve currency and exchange it with the rest of the world and use it to be able to buy things and so on, which they can do on a very, very, very limited basis right now. But first thing that has to happen is the World Bank and the United Nations has to recognize the currency as a reserve currency. And that's probably going to happen in a couple of years. Right now, they need to do some reforms because the United States has the capability of vetoing that, and we would.
We would, because they're still locked to the dollar. And
right.
If you want to use the yuan as a reserve currency, you have to unlock.
Well, they have to. What the President has said and the Secretary of the Treasury says, they need to do some reforms internally with their finance system and make it more transparent before it can be accepted as a reserve currency.
Right.
By the way, the euro is accepted. The dollar is accepted.
Because
here's
we
the
all
point.
Accept the accounting practices that lead to what it's worth.
Here's the point. The assumption by the gold bugs was that the Chinese would accumulate the same level of gold reserves that the United States has versus the volume of its currency, so they would have to buy a lot of gold. Well, guess what? The Chinese have applied to have their currency certified as a reserve currency, and they have not accumulated the gold. Instead, guess what they accumulated because they consider it to be more stable?
Dollars.
Right. Dollar-denominated securities. Treasury debt. Isn't that amazing? That's
right.
Why they've been buying all the treasury debt.
Because they want to be a reserve currency, which means that they're a reserve of a reserve.
And the whole point is that the dollar, which is, by the way, a bearer bond from the United States government.
Yeah. It says note on the dollar.
We actually, oddly enough, have enough gold and more to pay off all our debts.
We have about $11.1 trillion of gold.
Which takes us back to an interesting thing. Following World War II, the United States had a bunch of gold. As a matter of fact, the dominant position in the world in gold could affect the price of gold. The dollar was backed by the gold, and the rest of the world was backed by the dollar. Well, guess what? We're back there again. Maybe we never left. I don't know. But
the gold's not been sold, so it's still there. It's still an implicit backing to the dollar. It's just not locked to the value of the currency.
It is locked to the ground, though.
It is locked. It is very heavy.
Yes, it is.
Gravity seems to affect it more than it affects other things.
Very grave situation. Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, in case you just tuned into a random station and had no idea who you were listening to.
Thank you for listening, and we're sorry for the loss of sanity that implies.
But we do need to do some commercials to keep KTEM on the air. And while we do not endorse any of these commercials, we may object to them, I don't know. But we're going to play them, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if today's Saturday, July 25th, where you are, you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 locally here in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400.
And that was I think that was a really neat commercial at the end there, you know, where you borrow some money. You know who really runs those commercials? That's another fictitious thing that really exists. The Loan Arranger. And the people who borrow from them are Tonto, which in Spanish, if you know some Spanish, you know what the definition of Tonto is in Spanish. If you know Chiricahua Apache, which I don't, but I have heard on good report that the word Kimosabi, for those of you who don't know, that's what Tonto, which means stupid in Spanish, called the Lone Ranger, called him Kimosabe. And he supposedly was a Chiricahua Apache, and I read a really interesting article by a Chiricahua as to exactly what that word means. We're just not going to say it here. Okay. What else is going on in the big wide world? There's probably some, there was some important things, but I forgot what they were. Okay. We've talked about gold. We could talk about Donald Trump. Everybody else is talking about Donald
Trump. No, I'm going to skip that one.
No, I'm going to talk about Donald Trump for a minute.
Okay.
I think Donald Trump is an amazing political reality. He has no philosophy. He was absolutely pro-abortion 5 years ago. Now he's totally anti-abortion. He was opened the borders up and let all of the Mexicans in that want to come in 5 years ago. Today he's anti-Mexican and closed the border.
Do you have sites for this?
I do.
This is part of the reason why I don't do it, because it gets to arguments over people's...
No, it was it's in The Economist. I got an article from The Economist, and they give all the sites. You're welcome to go to TheEconomist.com and read the article on Donald Trump, and you'll see all the things I just got through saying. They actually have sites for that. But
he's taking advantage of something that he sees as a good opportunity.
Yes, and he's having a ball. And the important thing is, I think, in here, is he's got like 24.9% of the likely primary voters next year support him in the Republican Party, which it's because
name familiarity is a big plus.
Not just names. He is saying what everybody else is thinking. I mean, there's no consistency to it, but he's saying it. But this is the interesting point. I know that most of the people who listen to this radio program are Republicans and would like to see a conservative in office. And I acknowledge the value in that. I acknowledge the importance of that. But I was joking with a friend of mine who is a proud liberal. I said we should start an urban myth and an internet rumor that says that Hillary Clinton is secretly paying Donald Trump to run for office. And he came back with, myth?
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to
when
Bill Clinton was running for office the first time around against George H.W. Bush, who was trying to be reelected, and that means that the advantage lies to the incumbent.
Right.
Ross Perot got into the mix, and everybody said, wow, he's a bit of a wild card. He's an independent. He's got some good ideas. He's very loud about them. He may not work very well with Congress, but his poll numbers kept getting higher and higher until he passed up both George H.W. and Bill in the polls. He got up there in the polls and looked like he had a chance to actually win the presidency. And he pulled out of the election.
But then he came back in after his popularity dropped.
He waited a couple of months as the popularity dropped and then came back in. Now, that's led to a lot of conspiracy theories about maybe he was just trying to split the Republican vote so that the Clintons would come in. And, you know, his companies made some deals with the government following
There's an actual article in Texas Monthly by his campaign manager that says, he told his campaign man, I think it was Roger Iles. I may have this wrong, but it was the guy who basically got Reagan elected. He hired him, and he came in and said, you're going to win the presidency. And the guy, and I won't use the exact language that's quoted in there because this is a family radio station, but basically Ross Perot expressed extreme displeasure at the idea of being president.
Even though he was running for the office.
And he says, my job is to see to it that George H.W. Bush is not reelected, not to actually become the bleep president of the bleeping United States of America.
I don't know that Donald Trump is in that position.
Well, I
think Donald Trump is enjoying this too much.
He is.
I think he is.
That's what the article in the
he's enjoying putting himself out in front of everyone.
That's what the article in The Economist, by the way, said, is that he, by people who know him, that he is enjoying the heck out of this. He is at the center of everybody's attention. He said this, as far as he's concerned, it's a reality TV show. And they noticed an interesting point. When he started with the Apprentice, you started with 16 people who were applying for a $250,000 job.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
How many Republican presidential candidates are there right now?
But he's one of the apprentices applying.
But
at this
point, doesn't see himself as the apprentice.
Right.
And he has the ability to devastate anybody else running in the campaign.
He's got a lot of money.
He
doesn't have to raise the money. He's got it.
I like one of the article. One of the things that it says in the Economist article that was very, very accurate, I think, is he is a super PAC.
Yeah.
He can do it. He said, his threats to start an independent party if they don't nominate him That would be an interesting thing. He said, they said, because you can look at the cost of doing that. It's about $200 million, which he probably, that's his pocket change.
Well, the reality of this is that even though he's lost some deals with the networks over this, with, you know, Miss America and so on, the reality is that his national attention right now has all of the networks salivating to get him back.
Oh, he gets all the he gets so much free. It was in the news just a minute ago.
Yeah, he gets free media attention because he says things that are just absolutely absurd regularly.
And the point is that his brand name keeps getting pumped up in value with every time he opens his mouth because the people who like what he is saying, he's saying what they're thinking.
Yeah, for every dollar that he's lost by bad-mouthing immigration or homosexuality or abortion, he gains a dollar or more, probably $2, from people that are never going to leave their loyalty for him.
Well, this is an interesting point. He hasn't actually lost money. NASCAR rejected his endorsement. Well, his where he could advertise, he has to pay to advertise in NASCAR, okay?
Well, he lost money in that the advertising revenue that he would have had on the different networks for Miss America goes away.
Well, the point is he pays to do all those things.
Right, but he also makes money doing them.
Well, yeah, but not the issue is mostly those are places he advertised that have stopped doing business with
him.
The places...
He's getting enough advertising for free right now.
The places where he really makes his money, like casinos and so on, he owns them.
Yeah.
So they're not going to – and by the way, their business is up because people are going to his casinos simply because he's saying what he's saying.
Right.
Man is brilliant. I will also say
– I wouldn't throw that at him. I don't think he's particularly intelligent. I think he's savvy.
I think he's incredibly brilliant, cynical as the day is long, but – I think to do what he's done, and also, now according to him, according to his website, now look this up in all caps, it says that he has a net worth of $10 billion, and these other guys who are trying to run against him couldn't find a job if their life depended on it, a real job, as he said.
The problem with his net worth, this is a big problem, is that he's counting all of his profitable companies into his net worth, and he's not counting the companies that he also owns big chunks of that are only debt.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Forbes said that they listed him at $2.3 billion.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, 2.3, 10.
That's still really big. It's still really big.
$200 million to run an independent campaign as a third party.
No big deal.
This is the interesting point that came out in the research I was doing. The people who have rejected him, his cost... that his savings from not being able to advertise with all these people who no longer accept his endorsement, which means that he pays them to do that, is around $200 million. He's saving $200 million getting free publicity that he doesn't have to pay for.
It's not costing him anything, and he's getting a massive boost to his name.
And the Economist had a conclusion. He's in the lead. His lead keeps gaining. If he wins the Republican nomination, it virtually assures Hillary Clinton will be our next president.
Right. Because the center does not find him popular at all. The Tea Party finds him popular.
Mm-hmm.
And the conservative Republicans find him popular. But he's not. This is a trend that's been going on since George H.W. Bush. The center has been growing. As the political parties get more and more polarized, the people that don't like the Republican Party and the people that don't like the Democrat Party tend to be the same people.
Nope.
They don't like either of them. They're getting more and more into the center.
Excuse me, it was not the Economist, it's the Financial Times.
Times. Yeah, well, I think
July 24th article from the Financial Times.
Right.
Which, anyway, I just want to make sure that I did have a site for all of this stuff where they point out his inconsistencies and quote from his book. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Caller?
Go ahead. You're on the air. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have to turn my radio on to hear you. Hang on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but you got to turn the radio off now.
Okay.
There you go.
Now go ahead.
Okay. All right. I can hear you now. All right. I have a theory about Donald Trump. He's a bull in the China cabinet. And what he's doing, he's knocking off the the lightweights are the people who just don't really need to be president. Rick Perry being one, and there could be some other ones.
Well, his characterization of Rick Perry is what everybody who knows Rick Perry agrees. Did you hear what he called Rick Perry?
Not lately.
He simply said, "Rick Perry, he's stupid."
I kind of agree.
That was his entire comment.
I kind of agree with his assessment. And so I don't want Rick Perry to be president. And I'm not sure Donald Trump wants to be president either.
I don't think he wants to be president. I think he wants to have some fun and elect Hillary.
Well, I hope not. But, you know, what you're saying, that sounds like something Hillary would engineer in the background.
Seriously.
Donald Trump.
You go read
those money that much.
You read the financial. You read the Financial Times article, and you'll see that his positions just a few years ago, and her positions that she's announcing today politically, are identical.
Boy,
he has become
scaring me now.
He has become a right wing. He's become a right wing conservative, only very recently, and he is.
He started not that long ago by requesting that Barack Obama come up with his birth certificate. So so he's been kind of aiming at the presidency for a little bit. You know, if you go back 10 years, the guy is a liberal. You come forward and suddenly he's extreme conservative.
But here's the interesting point. If you watch his rise in conservatism, apparent conservatism.
Right.
His anti-liberalism, actually, okay?
Yeah.
And also his anti-alt conservative presidential candidates. You chart that, and you chart Hillary Clinton's interest
in running for election. Yes.
They go right together. Well, I mean, I'm just trying – and I have no evidence of this, by the way. I'm simply trying to start an urban myth and an internet conspiracy theory.
I think that would have happened anyway.
Okay. Well, I don't know anybody else who's doing it.
I don't think he's going to get the nomination, although he is very popular with us right-wing Tea Party Christian types.
Well,
but he won't get the nomination because, precisely, he is not a Christian. And he has wavered over the past. And all this is going to come out. And he is going to step in it sooner or later, and it is going to stick.
Yeah,
he has stepped in it over and over again. It is all
over
him.
It's the only thing he's stepping in right now.
You can't embarrass him because everything that you – charge him with, he says, sure, that's what I do.
Yeah, and basically, I think, caller, you're right in that if you go back through every presidential election and you look at who's ahead in the primary polls at this point in the election, they don't win.
From a mechanical, from a purely statistical point of view.
We can't keep people that popular for that long.
We
like to hate them.
Jeb Bush is probably going to win the nomination.
He better not.
But, guys,
I didn't want the same thing to happen this week as happened last week. I am your caller.
All right,
well,
good job.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate
it. The call.
We know that one person is listening.
We broke a record.
Yeah.
And the record was the first call of the day.
We got it in the first hour.
Right. My nephew said that it's funny we've had all of these records being broken for presidency, and if you know, we had the first black president, and if the next time around we have the first female president. And I said, well, every presidency is a breaking of record. It's the first time that that person has been elected, or in the case that he's being reelected or she's being reelected, then it's the first time that they've been reelected. So we break a record every time. It just depends on what you want to call the record.
But it's
in this case, the record is the first caller of the day.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually have no, I think his run for presidency is, by the way, fascinating. I'm really enjoying it. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, I agree. I've been laughing quite a lot because this is it is reality television, and that's what he's good at. And he's leveraged in a way that he's going to make a lot of money off of his run for the presidency.
I can very easily see him making such a sizable show. I can very easily see this campaign going to the floor of the convention undecided.
One of my favorite quotes for his presidency is, "We shall overcome." And that's with the B, not an E, so...
We shall overcome?
Yes.
Oh. Well, you are listening to Personal Wealth Coach, and we're about out of time for our first hour on this Saturday, July 25th. If for some reason, like you need a portfolio manager or something, or you want some advice on investing for real, you'd like to contact us, or you just have some comment about the radio show and you want to, or program, and you want to tell us what to talk about or where to go, you can. We have a voicemail on the weekends and real live human beings that answer the phone during the week. And the telephone numbers in our office are locally 947-1111 or
toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You can listen to podcasts. You can read our philosophy. You can look at our made-for-radio faces. And until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.